This is Betsy Kulikowski, best-selling author of the Veritas Codex Paranormal Thriller Series, and you're listening to Ghost in the Valley Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Ghost in the Valley Podcast. I am your host, Al Cooley. Today I have Christina Spencer as my guest. She is phenomenal. She is a host of the YouTube podcast, the Horror, History, and Hauntings podcast, and also a second show she has on YouTube is called the Horror, History, and Hauntings Library podcast. I'm really excited about that one. Every month, Christina highlights an author and his or her book for that whole month. So for 3 weeks, she'll read chapters out of the book. And then the last week, she'll have the author on answering questions that she has and also talking about the book. It's a great way to promote the up-and-coming authors out there. I am so honored that she picked my book, Spencer's Ghost, for the month of February. So I am her featured author for the month. And please check in every Friday at 9:30 on YouTube on the Horror, History, and Hauntings Library podcast. Christina is also putting on the Green Eggs Foundation event. The Green Eggs Foundation is committed to nurturing creativity and confidence in school-aged children through the transformative power of the arts. We believe that the exposure to music, visual art, dance, written, spoken word, and theater is not a luxury. It is an essential part of a well-rounded education, offering young people an outlet to process their experience and express themselves in healthy, constructive ways. I mean, how important is having the arts back into schools and back into our public life, man? I mean, you have to support this. You're taking away the arts, and I think it's so important to keep the arts back in the schools. I'm going to put the link to the Green Eggs Foundation at the bottom of this episode. And please, if you can, donate any amount that you feel comfortable with. This is an important cause. I do support it 100%. So please, please, if you have something you would like to donate so they can raffle off, a book, a drawing, a painting, anything you can donate to the Green Eggs Foundation. Very well appreciated by Christina and the staff at the Green Eggs Foundation. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Christina Spencer.
Hi, guys. Thanks for inviting me.
It is my honor having you on, and I want to thank you for reading my book, and also you're going to highlight it in February.
The way the podcast is Horror, History, and Hauntings Library, and not to be confused, because I do two different podcasts. I do Horror, History, and Hauntings podcast, where I do basic interviews and I sit down and talk with people. But then I started doing the Horror, History, and Hauntings Library because I had a lot of authors coming on and it just didn't feel like an hour was enough. And especially if you're an indie author, it's hard to get, you know, a lot of frenzy around your book. You know, even if it's a really great book, it's hard to get it out there for people. And I was like, how can I, you know, help these authors? And then my first podcast ever was the Haunting Tales from the Old Rocking Chair. And what I did was basically tell stories. Like I would find stories on Reddit. I would contact the author, get their permission to read it on air, and that was my first ever podcast. It was much like this one. It was just voice only, and it was me and a microphone and a story, and I would do background music and stuff. So, but doing that week after week, trying to come up with stories for an hour and then getting all the approvals, like I got burnout. So unfortunately, I couldn't do it like forever, but I was like, it's coming from that Haunted Tales from the Old Rocking Chair roots, but bringing it to something that I think could benefit everybody, because everybody likes a good bedtime story. I don't care your age. So I was like, what can I do that kind of gives that feel of like a relaxing, but, you know, the creepy, you know, paranormal twist that I love so much. So that's was the origin of how, like, I thought up the idea. And the network, the Riff Radio Network, just, they were so supportive, and they're just like, go for it. Like, let's see what happens, you know, just do it. It's been phenomenal, the response so far. Like, it gets me a little, but. Oh,
the network that's sponsoring you, they do all the work as far as editing and all that? As far
no,
as,
when don't. It comes to the podcasts are done live. So there's no editing involved.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So if I fub up, I fub up. I try my best, but I am human. But I try to make a relaxing vibe with some little bit of background music. I bring Bob. Where is Bob? Bob. Anyway, my skull head, I like to create like an ambiance type of thing where it's not just me, you know, mm-hmm. on screen, yeah. but something more relaxing and chill for people to kind of relax to and have their cup of tea and their candle and their bedtime story.
Yeah, you were talking about the, you know, just on the audio. I've been doing this like for 8 years, the audio. I like the old radio style interviews, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, and I have a lot of compliments from people who, like say truck drivers that drive across the country, and they listen, they know it comes on every Monday. And so they'll, or every other Monday, and they'll say, oh yeah, you was on this month. What happened? You know. So, so I know I got some listeners out there, but I have some people that they want the video. You know, they want the YouTube. So I think I may, for the first time, breaking the mold. I'm going to start doing a few live.
So, oh, nice.
Just to get back into the swing of it. I mean, I'm not afraid of going live. I mean, I've been playing a band for 60 years. So my wife says, don't you get a voice, nervous? Stage fright, nervous, you know, or.
Right. So
a lot of people like that, you know, they like the flub ups. They like the stuff that.
Interactions.
Technical difficulties, a dog in the background bark. And in your case, maybe a goat.
Yep. we have some goat eruptions sometimes, you know, and the chaos in the background. Because we have a menagerie, I swear, here. But we love every one of them.
I try to get some of your old episodes. I watched your unboxing of my my book. And I want to thank you on that also.
You're welcome. And,
what was the ghost name? Something Coltrane.
Oh, yeah. That's the one goat. His name is Jethro P. Coltrane.
Jethro P. Coltrane. Okay.
And the other one's Ruby June. But Jethro P. Coltrane, we named him that because... P stands for a lot of things, like pain in the ass sometimes.
Okay.
And Coltrane, because we're in West Virginia, so coal and train. And we used to, you know, every time he was into something, we'd say, Jethro P. Coltrane, get out of that. You know, because it's like having a toddler, and now we have two of them. So chaos. And
I worked for a manufacturing company for like 45 years, and that's what we did drop forgings for the railroad.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So my wife, way back in the day, you know, every time she would see the news, you know, that there was a derailment somewhere around the world, anywhere, because we were like the number three manufacturer of these parts. And she knew as soon as there was a derailment, I'm working over, you know. So,
oh, wow.
So she knew that. And sometimes it lasted 16 hours or whatever. You had to do what you had to do to get that train back on the track. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was reading some of your background. And so you have a degree in metaphysical humanistic science. What is that?
Basically, it's a bachelor's degree in parapsychology. I'm working on my master's. Once I get that done, then I want to try to get my PhD. And basically, it's just the study of the weird, I guess the best way to put it. But I have a special interest with like the paranormal investigations, and like I like learning how the brain operates under certain stressors. That's just me, because fear can make your brain do a lot of things. So I like to know the logic behind sometimes when stuff's going on, like, wait a minute, like there's more going on than just like a bump, like a noise or, you know, and I'm like, did you just, you know, it's good to know how the brain operates for when you're debunking, because there are a lot of things in psychology that plays in those type of situations where you're in the dark, strange location, groups of people have a mixture of energies and that kind of thing. So I don't know. It's always been a fascinating thing for me because I've kind of been in the paranormal since I was a kid. I was the weird book nerd in the library. If you haven't noticed, I've always been the nerd and the one that's like, I was always the weirdo, I guess the best way to put it. Because I was always, I had my notes in a book. I had, you know, armfuls of books from the library. I read the encyclopedia for fun. Like, I was a weird kid. So as an adult, I just carried that weirdness, wear it, you know, on my sleeve as a badge of honor that I am a weirdo and I like horror and paranormal and all that jazz. So, and I just happened to run into these people that just seem to be like, I like your weirdness. I support it. Let's go.
Well, you know, I've been called crazy for 70 years. So I think when I came out of my mother's womb, they said, here's a weirdo. Here's a goofy, you know. So, you know, but the I heard through the grapevine that you're writing a book.
Well, according to April, the New Jersey Housewife Medium, I'm supposed to write 3 or 4 books. I only plan on writing one, but according to her, I'm going to do a series. So we'll see how that works out. But it's basically about a young girl. She goes to a high school party in the 90s. She's I based her a little bit how I was in high school, a little awkward, a little more of a book nerd, but like to write, kind of, you know, kind of a loner type. But she does have this best friend who is like Miss Outgoing. Everybody seems to like her. She floats, you know, in the different cliques in school. And she convinces her to go to this last high school party of the summer until their senior year. And unfortunately, stuff happens and she passes away at this party, but they're able to bring her back. And once she comes back, she discovers a world that was completely new to her. So she kind of gets mixed up with this town over and the history behind her father and how he died was an accident. And there's a whole history about her dad that she didn't know about. And we dive into that. And like, yeah, I'm excited about it, but it's a slow going process.
What's the name of it?
It's going to be, well, the working title right now is When Shadows Whisper.
Okay. When are you expecting a release date?
I want to finish it in the next couple months. And then, of course, you know, it's the second draft and then the beta readers. So hopefully this year, I'm hoping by the end of this year, I'll have something, but it's a work in progress. And I've kind of took on some projects here and there. So yeah, I'm focused on the deadline of hopefully have it done and ready by the end of the year. But I'm really looking forward to it and seeing what people think of it.
Did you base anything in this book, like off of like any real life characters, or maybe gave you how this one chapter is going to go to another? I mean, my book was pretty easy because mine was based on true story. So I just basically went back in my archives, you know, and it helped when my sister would call too. And she'd say, make sure you put this in your book. Did you remember that? Oh man, I forgot about that. You know?
Oh, so, yeah, I cannot wait to get you on the 4th episode with the interview, because I could have read this book in one sitting. I really could have.
Yeah, that's another thing. Amazon, they want you to target like your target audience. What is your target audience? You know, 12 to whatever, or young adults. And I thought, you know, I really don't know, because I would
right?
I would probably say young adult, because I was 12 to maybe 16 during the periods in that book.
But then it also, it speaks to, like, an older generation. Because, I'm Gen X, so I kind of relate to the before the phones were a thing. And, and that's where I'm writing from. That's why I chose the 90s. That's my point of view of being a teenager and being in that time frame was what I know. So that's kind of where I wrote from.
It's hard to explain to somebody. I was on a podcast and I said, you know, why did it take me so long to write this book? Why did it take me so long? You know, it says, well, who do you go to? A lot of times in my book, like, we want to call the police.
Right.
But when the cops get there,
what do you tell them?
They're upstairs, but there's nobody there. I mean, you man, they're going to lock my ass up because, you know, I don't care that you're smoking dope or whatever. Not with today, all the social media, TikTok and Snapchat and Instagram. I mean, there's so many avenues. If you have an interest in that's why podcasts are so fantastic. There's something out there for everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I tell people, if you don't like my show, that's fine. Go to another show or go to your show. And I'll point them that way. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, I know I've got 200,000 downloads, you know, so I'm not all, you're not making any money. I mean, I make a little bit off advertising, but I'm not making a ton of money. I mean,
right.
I don't think there's anybody that I know in podcasting that can go out and buy themselves a new Cadillac or whatever for off their podcasting, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm really honored when there's people like yourself that help out other people. I mean, what you're doing is a lot of work. I mean, you love what you're doing. I can tell. You say you're a nerd, a librarian in a school and always reading books. And
that was my safe space.
The dictionary. You know, but that's so cool because I can tell by even when I listened to the first month you did on the first book, and I can tell you love, like, the one I think you messed up on the episode and you went back and you redid it. A lot of people wouldn't do that.
I was so upset with the first episode because it was the first ever. So I knew like what I wanted, but because I'd never done it before and the way the network does it, it's like, I've already had a show, so I didn't have the help behind the scenes like you do with a new show typically with the network. So it was all on me. So, and I wanted to make it the best thing because I do have a passion for the show and I do see where, you know, it can be interesting for different people for different reasons. Some people watch it because they want to go to sleep and, you know, they always say like, I had a calming voice. So I'm like, how could I use that and make something people could relax to and like wind down with at the end of the day? And then I wanted to also, you know, help out my authors and, because like I said, I would get them on the regular podcast and an hour isn't really enough to get to know a person, let alone, you know, their art, because you can learn a lot and you never know what books you would be interested in. So I wanted to like merge that and give people a chance to kind of get to know a book and see if it's something that they would want to read or if it would be. And a lot of times, like first couple chapters, you may be like, definitely, like, I got to finish this book. And that's part of the reason, like, I didn't want to do like a full audio book because I want people to have a chance to experience the ending for themselves and to sit down, you know, old school with a book in their hand and finish that conclusion, you know, in the privacy of their own home.
I've always been that way. I always took the print book over the ebook, so to speak, you know, until my daughter bought me a Kindle for Christmas a couple years ago, and I'm like, doggone you, Natalie. I mean, now you have me buying books off of, you know, Kindle. And
the thing with the Kindle, I have an issue because I have one too, but I learned I can put other things on it. And with my ADHD, it's too many choices. I end up open Facebook or Twitter or something else, and then I don't end up reading. And, you know, when you have a book, it's hard to get distracted from paper, and that's what helps me.
Yeah, I read a book every night before I go to bed. I mean, I'm a slow reader. I don't read as fast as you, that's for sure. When you have a book that you can really enjoy, like the one I'm reading now, I'm really enjoying it. I mean, I have a couple complaints about because there's no, I'm anal when it comes to page numbers or when there's no page number, it bothers me. You know, so I don't know where I'm at in the book. You get the chapters, yeah, but just, you know, it's just it was done like chapter. And my wife, she said, just read it. You know, it's like, you know, I'm like, That bothers me.
I didn't know what progress I'm at in the point in the book. I need numbers, man. I need numbers.
Yeah. So do you consider yourself a psychic medium?
No. By no stretch of the imagination. I would consider myself more, I would say, sensitive. I look up to a psychic mediums that can get like right on it, you know, that they have that talent. I don't. Usually I go into a place and I can kind of get a vibe.
I know I have a guardian angel. I've had it all my whole life. I know it, but it's just I can't tell you who it is. I have an idea. Mm-hmm. But it's like some people come on my show, they have like 8-10 angels or guardians around them at all times, you know, and they know who mm-hmm. they are.
Yeah, I don't have that blessed. I think that there is certain things that look out for me when it comes to, like, usually I wouldn't say I talk to God, but I usually throw it up to the universe is how I put it. It's like, hey, like, mm-hmm. this is the situation. Do you mind helping a girl out? Because I don't know what to do at this point.
That's why on my podcast, I try to separate spirituality with Christianity because, right. I grew up in a Methodist church. When my wife and I got married, I had to be Catholic, so they convert over to being Catholic. Not so you grew up, you grew up with God in your life. And so if you had a question, which I always did, about something happening in the Bible that's involved in exorcism or a ghost of a spirit, well, we don't talk about that. Why not? I mean, right. if you keep going down that path, you're going down this train of hell, you know. So I'm like, they put the fear of God in you in church, you know, and then
you kind of. Well, that's the big question, isn't it? That's what we're all looking for. It's like, what happens when we die? Atheists, they believe the lights go out when you die. Like, there's nothing else but the life that we live, and we're just electrical impulses. So it's interesting that point of view because it's like it's hard for me to think of an atheist paranormal investigator because it's like you have to believe there's something besides the physical form and electricity in order to be an investigator.
Well, you got the other realm though. Your realm could be also Earth, so you mm-hmm. could be moving on to the whatever realm you believe in. So if you exactly. believe there's no heaven or hell, maybe you're moving the spirit on to just another realm mm-hmm. of. Whatever existence that your beliefs are
exactly.
in.
Exactly. The state of energy, like we know through physics, what we know it to be fact is energy never goes away. So the energy, the electrical impulses and everything that makes a consciousness, it has to go somewhere. The thing is we don't know where it goes. But the conservation of energy states that any amount of energy has to be turned into something else. It has to go somewhere, you know, whether it is dispersed amongst like the people that is still awake in their consciousness or whether it goes on to some Akashic record, or do we have to go back to our bodies and experience everything from every point of view before we become like part of the Akashic record or the great universe or whatever mm-hmm. happens beyond, because that's the great mystery with paranormal investigation. Nobody knows. And it's just like, it's the new frontier when it comes to science, because the thinness between magic and science is knowing what's going on and not knowing what's going on. So we're all tinkering with the science, trying to figure out a way to prove that this magical thing, you know, is real. And it's not to say anybody is wrong, because none of us know exactly what's right. So it's kind of like the wild west of science right now, which is an interesting time to be involved with the paranormal community.
That's why I've always said, you know, the paranormal is unexplained. So if I could explain what you can't put a goose in a cubicle or you can't put Bigfoot in there. So it's like,
oh, you can. It may create chaos. You know, then you get into chaos theory.
But can you imagine, though? I mean, if people couldn't handle no toilet paper during COVID, imagine how they're going to.
Right. Exactly.
An alien or Bigfoot.
Oh, my gosh. And then they wonder, like, because fundamentally, as humans, we're a tribe species. We have to sort, like, we seek out peers for support when it comes to survival from caveman times. You know, the only way we survived was together. And we have this kind of herd kind of mentality, or like kind of ants in an ant farm type of thing, where we have to seek acceptance and our place in this world, but we don't really even understand what our place is in this world. So it's like, and we have this hubris to think that we know everything, when there's so much about the world in general that we've never even explored and we can't even conceptualize because our brain is just incapable of it. But we think we can because we are human and we are, you know, the most intelligent species, you know, you know, tighten your tie. You know what I mean? Like when people get like that, it's like, take a step back and think about it. You are one piece of star that happened to create you. You are stardust. And you think, how many stars are there in the universe? How many things are floating out that we don't understand?
Could you imagine the vastness of space? And to say that we're the most intelligent.
Right. Like, there's no way for the human mind to picture infinity. And I think for us to really understand how everything works, that's something that we would have to understand. So that it's narrow-minded to assume that there's nothing smarter out there besides us. And we're such a small, itty bitty big kind of sand in an ocean of worlds and universes. And then you get into like paranormal universes and wormhole theory. And who knows?
I see you live in the Appalachians. Okay. You know where I'm going with this, right?
Yep.
So Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the Appalachian, it goes a long way. I mean, I don't know how many miles. I had it on a piece of paper. It's huge. How many states and it covers. But you live in the Appalachians. And I've been down in that area. And I think you have mentioned before that some of the people down there have your own culture.
Oh, yeah.
Well, your own language.
Where I grew up, because I grew up and I live currently in the little teapot handle of West Virginia. So we're kind of squished between Maryland and Virginia. And if you know, the Appalachian goes right up through there, you know, it's near the end of it, but it's, you know, through up that little handle. So I'm the rare part of West Virginia that actually is part of the Appalachian Mountains. But especially in Virginia going north, especially because where the mountains are the most prevalent is where you get more of the stories, like what you're talking about, you know, Tennessee and down south, and then it comes up. Where West Virginia, they have their own, like, tales from the mountains, because they have a lot of folklore. Because one thing that's unique about Appalachia in particular is when Pangea, if you don't know what Pangea is, it's when all the continents were one great big thing. And it was just one mass of landforms. If you take your finger and you place it on the Appalachian Mountains in Pangea, and then you watch Pangea break up into our seven continents, the Appalachian Mountains don't really move. It's the one location and of all of Pangea that doesn't really move. It stretches, it gets flatter, of course, because, you know, weather and different things like that. But it doesn't move. So it makes you wonder, if it's that old, what could be in the Appalachian Mountains? And there's a lot of mountains, especially the Appalachian Trail and stuff like that, where it's very rural. And there's always tales of dogmen and Bigfoot and what they call white things in West Virginia and different cryptids. And then you get into wild men, which is something like you hear about a lot in West Virginia growing up. You know, you're always worried about, you know, a wild man in the woods. And then you add all the folklore on top of it. You know, you hear, if you hear something tapping in the middle of the night, no, you didn't. If you hear a voice call your name and you know you're alone, no, you didn't. If you never yell somebody's name in the woods after dark, if you hear something whistle, don't whistle back. Like,
yeah,
you learn all those rules. But so there's, it falls back into that hubris of, we think we know things, but there's reasons that these stories carry on. And if you've ever been in the middle of the woods and you're alone and the entire woods go silent, you know that feeling. Like, the hair on the back of your neck stands on the end. You know you're being watched by something that's definitely like predatory, because, you know, the animals wouldn't go silent like that unless something like that is there, because animals know before we do. whether there's something spooky and scary out there.
I mean, there's so many stories coming out of the Appalachians, even like those 411s. So that's another hole. Yeah. That's a whole another hole.
Rabbit hole.
Because
some of the 411s is crazy because it's right. Like the 411 stories. There's no explanation how a child that's 5 years old could get as far as they did on foot alone and survive zero temperatures. And you hear these stories like all over the place. And then I always find it fascinating when you're talking about the Bigfoot myths is if you take like Bigfoot sightings and you take a map of like cave systems in mountains and you overlay them, it almost matches identically. And then if you take another map and you overlay like missing persons, like 411s, mm-hmm. and that overlaps. So there has to be a reason for these stories. Before we had technology and knew how to write, that's how we educated our young, is through story. So the stories come from something, whether it be just to be careful in the woods because there's things that can eat you, to, you know, mythical creatures that protect the forest. You know, where do we know what's true and what's not? We know that there's bears because we've seen bears. But, you know, not to say that there isn't reasons that we don't see these things. Maybe they know that we aren't to be trusted or to, we're the scary ones. We're the monster to them, you know, because you can't tell me if somebody did find a real live Bigfoot, you know, that creature would be in serious harm because people want to be poking and prodding and testing and, mm-hmm. you know, that, and they seem like gentle creatures that they want. What we want is to protect our young and to have happy, safe lives. So they're going to avoid creatures like us.
Right. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
No, I haven't said, I don't think, I'm a big Mothman girl. I love my Mothman because I'm a West Virginia girl at heart, always will be. And I just love the Mothman stories. But personally, I've never seen anything. I mean, I've had some scary things in the woods that I didn't know what it was because I was the type of, because a lot of people don't understand it, especially our generation. We were latchkey kids and we were wild kids. Like, we had no adult supervision. We got into our own mischief. And because I was raised in the country, there was woods and we spent a lot of time in the woods. And a lot of times, like I would be walking in places I shouldn't be, you know, it's just the way it goes because that was our generation. But I remember one time I was walking in the woods and it was evening and it was one of those, I was having problems with a boyfriend, you know, and I decided I need to go for a walk, you know, back in high school. And I was walking along in the woods and I got that feeling like we were discussing. Mm-hmm. The whole woods went silent, not a cricket. That holler went as silent as a church mouse, all just out of the blue. And I got that back. That's why I'm talking from experience, that feeling of something like stalking you or mm-hmm. you were in danger. Yeah. And I was walking along basically a cliff face, like the bottom of it, and I could hear something above me. So I don't know if it was a bobcat, mountain lion, bear. I don't know. It could have been Bigfoot for all I know. But I could hear like rocks falling down, and it was tracking me across that ridge above me. Mm-hmm. So the only thing I could think is get up against that ridge and don't run. And I'm like, okay, breathe. Like, take the ridge, walk, do not run. Like, I'm going through all the things like people have told me through the years. Like, don't run, just walk. You have entered into a zone that you should not have entered for whatever reason. We need to leave immediately. Mm-hmm. And when I got out of there, I never went back to that area. But it was right around where I was living, and this was in Elk Garden. And we actually saw bobcats in the yard. We actually had to save one of our dogs because there was a bobcat hunting it outside. And I had to run out and grab it. And it was a whole thing. But so, yeah, like you just don't know. You don't know if it's a little predator or a big predator.
Right.
That it's scary. It's scary to be stalked by something that you don't know if it's going to wipe you out of existence or not.
Yeah, that's one thing we both have. Another thing we both have in common is you were a security guard. Mm-hmm. And so was I. So I worked all of those graveyard shifts, you know?
Oh, yeah. I love graveyard shifts.
Oh, yeah. You know, sometimes your mind can play tricks on you.
Yeah.
You want to immediately say it's paranormal. But, you know, especially after you're watching Halloween or something, and right? then you have to go out to work that night, you know?
Right.
And I'm doing this, guards around, you know, got to do it. It's a 25-mile base perimeter. I kept thinking to myself, why am I out here when there's military here? Can't they do their own damn security? I mean,
you know? Right.
And then somebody says, you can't go back to, and this, like, my car's headed this way. He says, you can't go back there right now. I says, why not?
Classified.
So, well, yeah, a lot of activity, and it's camp. Well, it's probably the next day there was some movement they couldn't explain. You know? So I just left it at that. But how would you put that in your report, you know?
Right, so exactly.
So anyway, while you're working that graveyard shift, have you ever come across something that...
Like, there was a couple... Like, I always talk about Carter Hall, which was... he was a tobacco plantation back in the 1700s. And it traded, this was in Virginia, so it traded hands through the Union and Confederacy back and forth. Like, one day the Confederacy could be parked, you know, set up camp in the front lawn, and then next week it could be, you know, the other side. And they used it as a field hospital back and forth. And it's a lot of history. And Stonewall Jackson had his cataracts removed from the back porch with his personal surgeon, and the Surgeon General did some stuff there. Like, there was, it's a lot of history at that location. And I've had a lot of creepy paranormal experiences there. Also, like, I worked, I'm not going to say where, it was a mall. And I did midnight, the night shift there for a while. And I've seen some things there. Again, it's the same area, Winchester area. So there's a lot of history in Winchester, a lot of traffic, you know, from the Civil War back in the day. So Yeah, I've had some weird things. And I think that's partly what fueled my interest too, was just, there's things you can't explain. And especially if you've experienced the same thing with somebody, because I always try to refrain from talking about it in the moment, because I don't want to taint somebody's experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want them to misremember what they experienced, because I've told them what I've experienced. So if I can find a way to communicate what I experienced without giving away everything, so I can kind of confirm with them, and that's happened at those locations, mm-hmm. where I haven't, I said, okay, this weird thing happened, and somebody goes, let me guess.
Yeah.
you know, experience this. And it's like, yeah, how did you know that? Well, what we didn't want to tell you, because I never want to tell the security until something happens. But
it's always scary when you're by yourself, you mm-hmm. know. And have you ever been on an investigation, like a paranormal investigation?
Yeah, I've done some private stuff for people. And I did one public investigation way back. I was briefly with the Virginia Independent Paranormal Society before the gentleman passed away. He had diabetes and unfortunately passed, but he was a great guy. I learned a lot from him. And we did a old, it was originally a metalsmithing shop, and eventually it became the fire hall. A volunteer fire hall.
A blacksmith
blacksmith.
Okay.
And they were having some experiences at the fire hall. So we came in and did an overnight investigation there. But when it comes to, I've done stuff for people for private, they're like, because I was always the weird one, you know, like something weird's going on. They're like, oh yeah, you have that aunt, that weird aunt that's into this stuff. Or, you know, oh, you have a friend that, let me ask her about this thing that's happened with my Danny's, you know, house or whatever. So I'll go in, and most of the time they just want to know whether it's something to be scared of. And most of the time it's not. There's nothing that's really out to get you or hurt you. They're just trying to communicate and let you know that they're still there. But I have had some interesting ones. I've had somebody contact me about a possessed bunk bed. And I helped them from a distance find a different group to investigate and they got rid of the bunk bed. It was one of those things, like, they got on Marketplace. You hear these stories. They purchased it from Marketplace, and the guy's like, very shady when they picked it up. Like, just take it. Like, we don't care. Just take it. And then, like, totally, like, deleted his profile and contact information right after gave away the bunk bed because he just wanted it out of his house. And then they started to experience weird stuff. So it just goes to show it could be anything that can have an attachment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I heard all the time. You know, spirit can, people talk about haunted dolls, you know, but it could be anything. It could be a book you brought home from a garage sale, or a lot of times it's a foreclosure or estate sale.
Estate sales, yeah.
So these Ouija boards, you know, it's like I've been told numerous times, it's not so much a Ouija board. People just don't close out the session, you know, and that could be anything, you know, tarot cards or seances or whatever you're working with. I mean, you've got to close that session out, or you're asking for trouble. Just like you buy that Ouija board from a garage sale, you don't know how many times
you don't know. Yeah, what it's been used for, where, how, you know, what's attached to it. Yeah, Ouija boards are interesting because just the phenomenon of the Ouija board amazes me, because it's basically playing, in my opinion, playing telephone with the other world realms.
Right.
Like, you don't know when you pick up that receiver who's going to answer. And
it wasn't made as a game. It was made for, it was actually originally called, I believe, the talking board. Mm-hmm. So, and who are you talking to? So exactly. You know what it was made for. So, you know, so it's really, I think it's kind of depending on how you look at it and how you approach it. My opinion is stay away from it. That's just my way. I mean, I've done it myself. I do know people that have had problems with them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's each their own. I mean, that's one thing about my show. You know, people come on, I think you're the same with your show. People come on your show, you don't judge them.
No.
You let them talk, let them voice their opinion.
I like to hark on the idea of, like, Art Bell, Coast to Coast, back in the day. Mm-hmm. Like, he had such an art about letting somebody tell their story, because regardless if you believe it or not is not the point. They believe it, and that's the point. And it's the same thing with your podcast and mine. Like, I want an open forum where anybody can talk about anything and not feel judged. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's their truth. If they think 100% they've experienced it, it's not my job to tell them that they're lying or they're wrong or anything like that, because in their heart, that's what they believe. That's not my, you know, I'm not here to judge or, you know, criticize anybody's experience.
So, you know, you don't know. I mean, somebody could have the same story you have in Australia, Kentucky. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's such a big, big field. And paranormal is a big, big field. And I learn all the time on this show, man. I knew about the black-eyed kids, but I never knew about the white-eyed kids, you know. And so I'm trying to dig into that right now. Now, I believe they're a lot more evil.
Yeah, you would think the black, because of the connotations of white and black, you know, through our storytelling, always makes us believe that white means it's light or bright or good. Versus black, and that's not necessarily they're just opposite ends of spectrum, kind of like yin and yang. You know, one's not good, one's not bad, but that they kind of cycle with each other and interact with each other. So it's like, when you're dealing with white-eyed children, typically they are a lot more bad. I mean, not to say black-eyed children are the best, but yeah. But it's the same thing, like, and many people can experience the same phenomenon in different ways. Like, we talk a lot about shadow people, for example. Uh-huh. Like, everybody talks about the hat men, but there are various different types of hat men. You've got top hat men, you've got the broad brimmed, you know, fedoras, and each one represents something. Then you have, like, the passive, you know, shadow people that you see, but they don't seem to see you and they don't interact. And then you have some that just stand there and look at you. And then, not to mention, like, red-eyed, you know, shadow people and yellow-eyed shadow people and black-eyed shadow people and white-eyed shadow people. Like, what are they? What's their deal? And then you have the stories like the Watchers and things like that, that they just kind of stand and they're like a symptom of something going to happen, or like an omen. So so one person can have the same experience, but it's not necessarily going to be the same exact experience, because it's based on their point of view. So it's like, it's interesting to hear different stories about like the same locations for me, because it's like, what kind of category is this type of, you know, what did you see type of thing? So you can hear the same story from five different point of views and have five completely different stories.
That's why I like it. I don't consider myself a paranormal investigator, but I have been out and investigated on my own or with a couple other people. By no means do I say I have a paranormal team or anything. I just had somebody call me the other day, wants me to come back out their house and I'll take a look at it. And I was just sure, you know. My thing is, you know, spirits are, that's all energy. We had talked about it before. That's how you can, with this ground penetrating radar. What do you think that works off of? Energy. Mm-hmm. So dowsing rods, energy, you know, find water, gas, electric. Bodies. So that tells me if that body has that energy under the ground, you know, as it's right. A dead body. So can you imagine that in a house or a building, the amount of energy that's in there?
I have a 2-year electronics diploma. So like, it depends on what it's using as a sensor. If it's more like a REM pod where it is like electro, like something getting in its field that it's producing, and it's kind of, you know, you're interfering with its field, and that could be triggering it to have as much static as the rest, or whether it's, you know, a proximity thing, or whether it's, you know, a light thing or a motion thing, is when you talk to people and they don't believe that, you know, human consciousness or human existence has energy. But I always like to use the example, I'm like, okay, so if somebody's standing behind you and they put their hand, you know, a half inch above your shoulder, now they're not touching you, but I guarantee you can feel them there. So how do you explain that? And it's also like, what's your definition of energy? Because in the paranormal, we use energy interchangeable with everything. But there's so many different energy sources in the world that I think we need to be a little bit more specific when we're talking about energy, because you have light energy, you have heat energy, you have electronic, energy, you have, you know, sound energy, because you got sound waves coming at you, light waves, and a lot of things, especially when you're dealing with like the sound spectrum and the light spectrum, we only see about that much and interact with that much. And there's so much more out there that we can't fathom or understand, because our eyes, our cones and rods in our eyes aren't sensitive to that type of light. Our ears can't pick up certain pitches that are obviously out there because our dogs can react to it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot in the world when we talk about energy. I think we need to be more, what type of energy are you talking about? It's like a psychic, like it's like tuning in a stereo. I think some people are just on the right frequency of the dial to be able to pick up certain things, or to have, be able to do these, what we would consider superhuman. It's just beyond what our medium is when it comes to the spectrum of what we can be as a human. I think there's people that are just on a different frequency or a different vibration, and they can tune in a little bit, that fine dial, and do or be more sensitive to those type of energies than, you know, the average day Joe on the bus, you know?
Yeah. So I was always fascinated me with the dowsing rods and the energy, and a lot of Native Americans will attest to that as well, with the ground being so sacred. You know, it's not so much the building or the people that, let's say, we're concentrating on. They do the ground, you know, how the ground is so, everything with life, you know,
right?
Trees and animals and plants. I mean, it's all.
Well, they've done some fascinating studies when it comes to like just exploring frequencies in general. Like, they have these electrodes that you can hook up to plants or mushrooms. Have you ever heard the music like that they made from the electrical impulses that they pick up? And they've done, it's beautiful sounding, but it's just these audio frequencies that are able to pick up from plants. And they've actually done experiments where they took, I want to say it was broccoli or cabbage. I don't remember what the vegetable was, but basically like they had people walk by these cabbages and then one of them just goes ape. I'm not going to say it, but rips the cabbage all to shreds and that kind of thing. And then they hook it up to electrical devices and then they have the people walk through again. And it causes a higher frequency burst of information when the person that did the damage, like it recognizes the person that damaged it, which is kind of really fascinating. It's like a plant recognizing a human that hurt it. It's mind blowing. But if everything's connected and there's energy being transferred all over, which it is, it's a proven scientific fact in subatomic particle theory. Like you rub something, you're exchanging electrons back and forth. That's how static electricity works and how, you know, different things work in our bodies. We are constantly exchanging electrons with other things around us in the air, you know, things we touch, people that we interact with. And I think that's how we bond with each other is, you know, exchanging our subatomic particles back and forth. The more that you share with somebody, the closer you are with them, because there's more of you and them and you. But and then you get into like the quantum entanglement theories and stuff like that. I think there's just so much out there that we don't understand, right, and it makes the world such a great place to live in because there's so much to learn that one person can't learn it all.
Well, you know what? I could talk to you all night, man. So I got running out of time. What's on your bucket list other than I know you get them two podcasts. You're takes a lot of your time up there and reading the books and.
I've got a lot going on. I mean, I have the educational videos that I do on occasion. I wanted to do those once a week, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to with everything else. With the two podcasts, and I'm helping with some nonprofit organizations and some independent filmmakers for some of their projects. It's been a lot, and there's been a lot of interest, and I'm getting a lot of asks for interviews and stuff, which is fantastic. I enjoy these so much. I love these so much, but and I appreciate all the excitement, but it's a lot for this little mountain girl to take in. Sometimes I'm just like, I'm just a little redneck mountain girl. Like
now, you're doing something in Beckley. What is that?
It's in Elkins, which is close to Beckley.
And, I'm sorry. Yeah, Elkins.
Unfortunately, we lost my nephew a couple years back. He had an aneurysm and he died suddenly. And he was a bass player and he played in a lot of metal bands in the area. And he was really in touch with the heartbeat of what it is music in that area. And when he passed away, a bunch of the bands like he interacted with created like a fundraiser to help the family initially bounce back from his death. But when they discovered that they all had this love for music and the arts, they created the Green Eggs Foundation because his stage name was Sam Green Eggs. So they created this Green Eggs Foundation for him. And basically they're trying to get arts back in the hands of kids. So whether it be an instrument or some lessons to learn how to paint or somebody that wants to learn graphic design, they're trying to have the funding to help this kid develop that art skill that they're passionate about. So in April 16th, I'm going to be hosting that. I'll be their MC. So I'll be up on stage and doing all the bands. And I am humbly asking people for donations of things that could be raffled to make money for the foundation and to just support the foundation, buy tickets, whatever. But that'll be October 16th. And I know I'll be doing some more stuff up until then as we figure out like, and I know there's Acid Mine Drainage is one of the main players that will be playing for that event. They've already agreed to it. They're going to be coming on the podcast with the Green Eggs Foundation maybe next month. I don't know. I don't have my date booked, but they'll be coming on talking about it more closer to the time.
Well, I wish you best of luck on that because that's a good cause.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'll put the links for that and everything else in the bottom of the episode. I want to thank you for coming on, Christina. And
thank you for inviting me. Yeah,
I'm excited. Next month, and that'll be a lot of fun too.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. Hopefully, I do your art justice, and I don't fub up too much.
Thank you, Christina Spencer. I'm putting Christina's links at the bottom of this episode, and please donate to the Green Eggs Foundation. Let's put the arts back into the hands of the children. And please check out Christina's podcast, the Horror, History, and Hauntings podcast, and also the Horror, History, Hauntings Library podcast, where I'll be the featured guest in the month of February. I'm your host, Al Cooley, Ghosts in the Valley podcast.